The Great Adventure, Al Fayed's roller coaster ride with Fulham FC. It takes the fascinating tale of Al Fayed's remarkable 16-year reign as the owner of Fulham. The flamboyant Harrods owner bought the famous old London club in a $6.25 million deal in the summer of 1997. What happened next was quite remarkable, as Motson used to say, excited to say. Joining me live on the line is the author of The Great Adventure, Tony Banks. Tony, good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. It is a story, isn't it? It is it's almost a Hollywood movie, isn't it? How did it come to pass, do you think?
Well, I hope it's a Hollywood movie because I'm waiting for the offers, frankly.
But if you think...
It came to pass, really. He was fired at the time. The owner of Harrods was looking to invest in a football club, and Fulham came along really as a viable prospect. And he'd had other offers and other kind of requests, but Fulham, being a small club, and he could take complete control of it, or more or less complete control of it at the start, which was what he wanted. So that's why he went in.
Right. Well, I mean, it is. If you don't know that particular area of London, and I used to live on West Hill, so it's within my stomping ground. It is one of the most picturesque, isn't it? Grounds at the Craven Cottage, on the banks of the Thames near Bishop's Park. You can't beat it, can you?
No, I loved it. I mean, that's if in the summer, if you're getting off the tube at Putney Bridge and you walk through the park to the ground, it's marvellous. Or, you cross the bridge from having had a quiet pint in Putney and you can't beat it, really. I think it's I think it's the best football walk in London. And of course, the park is still there. Plenty has changed in London, but that's still there. And it's not even that bad on a cold day because you can pop into the pub or the cafe.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. So where were Fulham then? Where were Fulham at that time? What division were they? Because, I mean, they were sort of, there is the small question of another club being just up the New King's Road and then up the, on the Fulham Broadway.
Well, he took over in the summer of May 1997, and they just won promotion from the bottom division of the Football League. That was the old Division 3. It's changed now, but it was Division 3 in those days. And they just won promotion under a young manager called Mickey Adams. So they were on the rise, but they were still pretty low. They were like in the third tier of British football. So, he wasn't taking over a big club in particularly good health, it has to be said.
And, I mean, for $6.25 million, which you wouldn't even get a sort of third choice on the subs bench for that, would you now?
You wouldn't, no. But at the same time, he pledged $30 million to rebuild the ground, buy the freehold of the ground, all sorts. So that was kind of like the initial price. But what he pledged when he took over is a lot more money than that. And clearly, it was going to take a lot more money than that to lift the club up the leagues. So 6.25 million was the initial sort of price to buy the club, but there was a lot more involved than that.
And if you looked at Al Fayed's reputation, I mean, he was flamboyant. He was the owner of Harrods. This is obviously, if you like it, he's at the peak of his powers at this time. He is perhaps one of the most recognisable faces, not only in business, but in British life.
Oh yeah, he was very well known. I mean, he'd bought Harrods. He was always on the television. He'd had a big dispute with Tiny Lonrow, and in the business pages of the football of the newspapers, the Financial Times. He was a big figure in British industry and British commerce, and very flamboyant. He was known for his antics and his outspokenness. If you remember at the time, he was also trying to get a British passport. So he was involved in politics as well. So he's very well known.
What was the reaction then like from the fans, from the rank and file? They probably sort of recognised him, but was it a certain sort of trepidation, or were they thinking, oh, we've got some real money behind us now, we're going to go places?
Well, it was a bit of both, because they'd had, as you said earlier, when we were talking about what a lovely part of London it is, of course, it's also a very valuable part of London, property-wise. And if you were to buy the area of Craven Cottage and plonk some houses on it, you'd do very well indeed, frankly, even then. So, and that threat had hit Fulham before. So the fans were thinking, why does he want to do this? You know, why? What's his motive? We're only a little club. We're not doing very well. We haven't got much money. Is he going to buy us, sell us, plonk loads of fat houses down there? And so there was a bit of scepticism. And from other people, yeah, there was a kind of a, blimey, here we go. We've got a millionaire. We're going to go places. Bit of both, really.
So what were the first sort of matches like then? What was the atmosphere like? And you know, did he do a lap of the ground, you know, waving his Fulham flag above his head, you know, proudly, or his scarf at least?
He didn't do that initially. He arrived when he actually arrived to buy the club. He arrived in a sort of a carriage, and it was all very flamboyant. But the first few games, he just sat there and watched, really. And it was more what was going on off the field. But of course, later on, he used to wander around the ground waving his flag before every match. And, you know, he'd invite celebrities down, Liz Hurley, Michael Jackson, obviously, we should talk about in the book. Tony Curtis. You know, he would. Oh, he loved it. He loved the publicity. He was always well up there. But at first, he stood and watched for a while.
Because at the time, I think the most famous supporter was Hugh Grant, if I remember correctly, for Fulham.
That's true. It was. There were a few others, Keith Allen, the comedian, as well. You may know.
Yes, we want to keep quiet about Keith Allen. Over the best of time, he's not exactly.
And his daughter Lily, you know, the pop star. She was a little kid running around as well. There were others, but yeah, it was. Well, it's always been quite a show busy club, actually. But at the time, I think Hugh was the most famous. And he is actually a genuine Fulham fan.
Yeah. And you talk about sort of little pop stars running around. Well, should we drop the M-bomb then, shall we? Michael Jackson and Fulham. Now, one of those blink and you think, excuse me, run that by me again moments, I think, in the history of English football has to be the strange relationship between Michael Jackson, if there was one at all, and Fulham Football Club. Please explain.
Well, I'll explain as much as I can, because I can't quite understand why Al-Fayed had this fixation with Michael Jackson, but he did, clearly. And in 1999, April 1999, I think they were playing Wigan. So there you go, Fulham v Wigan.
Glamour.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And invites Michael down to the ground to watch this game, Fulham v Wigan, which no doubt was high on Michael Jackson's social calendar at the time, you know. Anyway, he arrives and the players didn't believe it. I've spoken to several, he's always saying stuff like this, it isn't being, it's being Michael Jackson lookalike. And then Michael Jackson sort of, in his kind of, he had a parasol and a cap and shades. And so you can never actually quite sure it was actually him. Wanders around the ground beforehand, sits in the stand, watches the game. And then at the end of the game, Fayed takes him into the changing rooms. And they all realise it is actually Michael Jackson, you know. And he sort of says, you know, well done, good game, lads. And I'm not sure if I can say this on the radio, but he says, Fayed apparently says, watch yourselves, lads, Michael's coming in.
Right, okay, fair enough.
and the players realised it actually was Michael Jackson. And, of course, later on, Fayed puts up a statue to Michael Jackson in the ground.
Yes.
A couple of years later.
I mean, you'd think it would have been to one of the great Fulham players from the past, but, you know, as you said, Fayed was unconventional, to put it mildly. What was his, like, talking about unconventional, what was his relationship with managers like? Because, I mean, you know, Hodgson was there, wasn't he? Roy Hodgson was there. I mean, quite a few of the great and good were managed Fulham during this time. And, of course, he's taken them from the old third division up into Europe, for goodness sake.
Yeah, he said he'd do it in 5 years. He said he'd take them into the Premier League in 5 years. Actually did it in four, so you can't really knock that, you know. Yeah, and along the way, there were a lot of managers, 10 in all in his period in charge. Obviously, the most famous would be Roy, who took them into Europe and got them to the Europa League final. But there was Chris Coleman there as well. Kevin Keegan, don't forget, he was there. Generally speaking, he left them to it. You know, he didn't interfere. He didn't say, I want to pick the team. He wasn't like that. He gave them money on a generally anyway. Sometimes the old purse strings tighten, but he was pretty supportive of his managers. However, if you didn't win promotion and you didn't do very well, you were out the door fairly quickly.
And what about the players? Did he have favourites? And he wasn't a situation like you had Abramovich up the road when he got Shevchenko in the squad because the wives were friends. I mean, was there any of that, or did he just literally let the managers get on with it?
He used to let the managers get on with it. I mean, he was always around. He'd go into the players' bar. He'd go around and talk to them before the game, and he'd be there afterwards. But he didn't really. They bumped into him a lot, and he would invite them to Harrods and give them gift bags and all that sort of thing. And he'd give the kids loads of. They always had a Harrods gift card and everything, and he'd go up to their parents and sort of chat to them and offer them Viagra and stuff like that. You know, that was his idea of a joke, and. You know, and it was usually peppermints, by the way. He would offer like gold bars, and they'd go, "Oh, blimey, a gold bar!" It turned out to be chocolate wrapped in gold paper. You know, so he was always around. He was a very visible figure. Certainly, not towards the end, obviously, when he was getting older and he was wanted to sell. But yeah, he was. They bumped into him a lot.
I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? It's that sense of fun and also that sort of Egyptian sense of hospitality. You know, come to the shop.
Well, he loved England. I mean, he did. He'd been in England about a dozen years before he bought Fulham, and obviously he bought Harrods, and he'd had other little things. I think I've read and I've spoken to a few people said it was his Egyptian background because he. At that point when he was growing up, there was a lot of English influence in Egypt and, you know, with the army and the navy and everything. And he loved England. He really wanted to be part of English society. That was a big thing. So obviously when Dodi became involved with the royal family as well, that was great for him. He was, he really wanted to be part of it, but he didn't. Sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, you mentioned Dodi. Just my timeline is getting a bit mixed up. Had Dodi already passed on by the time he bought Fulham, or did that happen?
No, that happened very soon afterwards.
Oh,
he bought Fulham in the May.
Yeah.
And Dodi and Diana died in Paris, I think at the end of August that year, sadly. And then people sort of wondered, oh, God, he'll pull out now. He's devastated, grieving. That's the end of that. But he didn't, you know. It was a very emotional evening, I think, the game against Plymouth, pretty much three or four games after he'd taken over, and he comes out onto the pitch and a Piper pays a lament. The thing had happened about 2 weeks before. Piper plays a lament on the pitch. The players all stood silently. Michael Coley's spokesman made a statement, and it was a very emotional evening. But actually, the warmth he got from the crowd that night, a lot of people think, really cemented his relationship with Fulham because the fans were very sympathetic and bonded with him.
What, I mean, you mentioned sort of the Viagra, the fake Viagra being given out to parents. I mean, there must be, when you spoke to managers, backroom staff, players, I should imagine that everybody's got a fired story.
Yeah, there's a good one from Chris Coleman. Well, you know about him at one point wanting to buy the Twin Towers of Wembley.
Tell me about that one. Yeah. What was he going to do, bring him down?
Well, the old Wembley, not where they played last night, but the old Wembley used to have two towers at the front.
Yep.
You probably remember. They were quite iconic.
Remember
they were knocked down. And at this period, they were going to knock the stadium down and rebuild it for this new Wembley. And Al Fayed hatched this plan to buy the Twin Towers, move them to Craven Cottage, put them on the shore of the Thames, and also build a bridge over the Thames to Barnes on the other side. So there would be like this iconic entrance to Fulham. Turned out it was completely bizarre plan. It was impossible to do because you couldn't knock them down and rebuild them again. They were built of some sort of cast concrete, and it was impossible. And it would have cost a fortune, and he was eventually persuaded out of it. But that kind of bizarre plan, he used to come up with those sort of things quite a lot, you know?
I'm not sure that the good folk of Barnes, and especially, what is it, the Sun on the Common there, would be too happy with having a direct entrance in the football club from their own sort of rather rarefied atmosphere.
Yeah, he never got that far, fortunately. So it was just one of those madcap plans. And
so, what was Chris Coleman? What was Chris Coleman's story then?
Well, they all tell the tale of they were all summoned to Harrods. I've had this story from several managers, and you'd go up the stairs at Harrods, you'd go through several sort of ante rooms, and you'd be made to wait for half an hour till the great man would see you. And I remember Chris Coleman saying to me one day, it was a Friday afternoon, he'd done all his training. The game was they had an important game on the Saturday. So Coleman gets summoned to Harrods and he wanders up there and he's made to wait for, you know, an hour or so. And then eventually the great man comes in and sees him. He's got a big book on the table. And he says to Coleman, sit down there, son. And he says, right, this is my plan. And Coleman thinks, oh, blimey, you know, because every time he went in there, you were halfway thinking he's going to fire me here because we've had a few bad results. And Al Fayed unfolds this massive book and it's a cardboard model of the ground. He says, this is what we're going to do. We're going to put this here, this here, this here. And then he looks up at Coleman and goes, we all set for tomorrow? And Coleman goes, yeah. He goes, right, that's it. Shuts the book and off he goes. And he says he'd waited like 3 hours to be told what the plan was to rebuild the ground. And that was it on a Friday, you know, sort of things like that. And then Paul Bracewell said, I went in to see him one day and he said, I've got these two players I want to buy. He said, no, you can't do that. He said, why not? He said, I'm buying an oil rig, so you can't buy those two strikers.
Well, I suppose that would shore up the defence if you had a, you know, had a large floating offshore platform in front of the goal, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it'd be a bit leaky, though, wouldn't it, I suppose?
True, true. So what? I mean, apart from the fact that it's an absolutely, and quote-unquote, ripping yarn, you know, and he is, you know, in an age where you've got... You know, Gulf states and consortiums buying football clubs. Can we describe him as the last, you know, an absolute maverick on this one?
Probably can, actually, now that Abramovich has gone from Chelsea as well and Jack Walker has gone from Blackburn. He was in that era. You're talking about one man here, aren't you? Not a state like with Manchester City and with, you know, Newcastle. You're talking about one man and with a lot of money. So it's a slightly different thing, isn't it? And that was, he was amongst that first group of them that came in and took English football or took a particular club into the stratosphere like Walker did at Blackburn, you know, and Abramovich did at Chelsea. It was a one-man thing. And in that way, it's quite remarkable that it worked. And it tastes better than, like, you know, some of the things that have been going on with, say, Newcastle and Manchester City in recent years, where they're virtually, seemingly anyway, owned by states, really. So this is a one man operation, and you can't deny it was successful.
What's your own favourite memory of the period?
Well, I like to concentrate on the football. Obviously, Fulham getting to the Europa League final. You can't beat that. When they beat Juventus at Craven Cottage 4-1 that night.
Yeah.
I mean, incredible.
The old lady of Italian football, the iconic name, you know. And
Ironically, I wasn't actually there. All my friends were because I was covering Chelsea at the time. I was at some dismal, you know, Champions League clash with Chelsea. And down the road was this extraordinary night unfolding, you know, when Clint Dempsey scores that goal. Bearing in mind, they were 3-1 down going in and they were playing the mighty Juventus. And, you know, I talked to people about that night. They've never forgotten it. Getting to the Europa League final was an astonishing feat. And they were very unlucky in that final, by the way, against Atletico Madrid.
Indeed. So what's your hope that people will learn from it? It's the fact that it was a special time and more about Fayed, because obviously is it 2 years? I always say it's about a year and a half, and it turns out to be 5 years. Is it 2 years since he passed?
No, it's only, he only died in August.
Right, okay. There you go. I got it wrong way around for once. Yeah.
He only died. Where are we now? October. He died. What about? Two and a half months ago. So he was 94. He dropped out of public life long before that. I did write to him and say, do you want to be involved in this? And his people wrote back and said, look, he's not
Yeah.
He's not involved in public life anymore. Please let him know when the book's coming out, which I would have done, obviously.
Sure.
But sadly, he passed before that happened. But, yeah, I mean, he was... He sold it in 2013, and he'd more or less dropped out of public life by that stage.
So what do you hope, then, that people will learn? Is there a message, or is it just a, as I said before, is it just a right riveting read?
Well, I hope it's a right riveting read, to put it mildly, but it's no message. It's a tale of an era, really, in Fulham Football Club, and it's a very, very interesting era, probably the most remarkable era in the club's history. And basically, I just tried to tell the tale, and I talked to the players and the managers and the people involved. That's all it is. It's a tale of an era, but it's a pretty spectacular era.
Yeah, and I mean, you've written about football and about London for a very long time now. Well, not very, but you know, it's your oeuvre, if you like. So, yeah. I mean, it's got to be one of the more, you know, like I said, entertaining and you know, as I said before, quite remarkable stories of football.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Abramovich era at Chelsea was amazing as well for them. But yeah, for a small club, bearing in mind where Fulham started from, it's a remarkable tale. And he did so much. He made them into what they are today because they've got not only the rebuilding of the ground, which started under him, the training ground. I mean, he really revved them up into a Premier League club. And from where they started, when there were mice running around the changing room and they only had about two teaspoons and, you know, there were showers didn't work and all that sort of thing. And the players often had, you know, it was just chaos. And you know, they didn't have a washing machine, all that sort of thing. And, you know, he just transformed the club. And I just tried to tell the tale, really.
The book is called The Great Adventure, Al Fayed's Roller Coaster Ride with Fulham FC. It's by Tony Banks, who we've been speaking to today. Tony, if people want to find you on that their social media or that X or Twitter or whatever else they're calling it these days, or do you have a website? Where can people find more about this book and all the other and sort of follow your regular writing?
Well, they can follow me on Twitter. I'm Tony Banks XP on Twitter. I've got an Instagram account, Tony Banks 52. They can get the book on.
Which is your age, obviously, Tony. That's your age, isn't it, Tony? Let's face it.
I wish. They can also, and if they go on, it's published by Pitch Publications, PITCH. And if they go on their website, they can get hold of it there. And, yeah, great Christmas present, in my view.
I think it would fill the stocking, you know, many a stocking of a football fan or somebody just wants to remember that very special time in London and that very special statue as well. The book is called The Great Adventure. It's by Tony Banks, who's speaking to today. Tony, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Charles. Take care.